there, folks, and welcome. Welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Zen Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by our sponsor, Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. You can find him on his website, japanimmigrationexperts.com, all one word. Drop him a line. Feel free to ask him any questions you may have, whether it's regarding a business visa, investment plan, business plan that you might have that's somehow related to Japan. He's already helped plenty of our clients and potential clients, property investors, business owners, retirees, you name it. Shimizu-san is your man. All right, so for today's episode, special treat and an extra long episode. This is a recording of a video meeting that I've had last week with a new client from Australia. Well, originally from Ireland, but long-term resident of Australia. His name is John, and he's a builder from Sydney, and he does some really beautiful renovation and restoration work, as you'll be able to see behind him in the background if you're watching the video. And if you're just listening in, and it is at all possible for you, you might want to switch over to our YouTube channel and look at the video. We'll link to it in this episode's show notes, because what we've done in this conversation is actual deal analysis. So John's put together some potential properties that he was interested in from various online sources. Now, I can't share those online sources with you directly, not without their permission. And I chose not to ask for that permission because, as you'll see from the video and you'll hear in the conversation, I wasn't always super flattering to those properties. And in some cases, to the agents and the platforms that advertise them, if I think they're really not very good offerings. So what I've done is I've put those numbers into Excel spreadsheets, as we normally do when we analyze and evaluate property deals on behalf of our clients. And you'll see those spreadsheets in the video via screen sharing. And we've really tried to take these apart and not just look at the numbers, but at the actual property profiles, the areas that they're in, age of the buildings, typical tenant profiles that may rent them, whether it's via long-term leases or short-term leases, because John is thinking about potentially doing his magic and turning these units into really attractive holiday stay apartments. And then in the later part of the video, when we get to the last few properties that he's just sent us a day or two before we recorded, so I didn't really have time to put those last ones into the deal analysis spreadsheet, so we just discussed them in principle. But in any case, even if you're only listening in via the podcast audio, I think you'll find some great value in this conversation. It really is nitty-gritty, sleeves-up, boots-to-the-ground kind of practical conversation with real-life examples of properties that many of our clients are buying or considering buying. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you are watching the video, don't be shy to pause, rewind, jot down some notes, etc. And I'll see you again on the other side. Yep, go for it. So you've moved to Sydney from Ireland, have you?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, moved to Sydney from Ireland. I spent 1 year in New Zealand. Actually, after the earthquakes happened in 2012.
Yeah.
So that was very close to the same time as Japan. That was just before Japan, actually, I think. So I was in New Zealand building new homes after the earthquake, and we were doing a lot of earthquake repairs. And then from there, my goal was to get back to Australia to sort of, you know, work in Sydney. And yeah, that's what I did. I got the visas all organized, and I started working for another builder in Sydney, and I ran that company for, 3.5-4 years. And then, yeah, we set up my own company with my brother and partner. And we provide a renovation, new build service in Sydney.
So a lot of restoration work like this one behind you?
Yeah, we do restoration work. I guess it would make up 20% of our projects doing restorations. I've actually just finished a really nice restoration in Glebe. I don't know if you remember that suburb in Sydney.
It's one of my favorite neighborhoods. I didn't live in Sydney, Glebe. But I stayed there a lot during my backpacking days, actually. Glebe is a beautiful place.
Yeah. So in Glebe, I finished a project there. It's $1.7 million. It was an extensive renovation of an old cottage. And that has been done really, really tastefully. On top of that, we added a large extension to the back of that house. So, I mean, that's pretty commonplace in Glebe, where all of those beautiful houses, they've got such big plots that quite often you would have the main house, an extension, and then a studio apartment above a double garage to the rear of the property because they've got double access.
Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of savvy sort of homeowners sort of cashing in on that at the moment, you know.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
So how did you first become interested in Japan?
So my partner is Japanese. I met Tomoko, over 12 years ago. About 13, 14 years ago while backpacking in Australia.
Yep.
So that's where my sort of, real sort of love for Japan started to get stronger. I mean, I'd always been into computer games and I'd always known Japan was like a technology giant, and there was always a little bit of an interest there, but not until I actually fully immersed. Tomoko showed me the culture and I actually stayed in Japan. I've been to Japan 8 times and I lived there for 3.5 months. I know a little bit about it, and I guess I became sort of more interested in property when Tomoko's family finished building a family home, but it was a 2-generation house.
Where is she from, Japan?
Narita.
From Narita, okay.
Yeah, from Narita, yeah. So, you know, seeing the property prices around Narita, I was sort of surprised. I think at the time the family built a 2-generation house for about 500,000 American.
Yeah.
And you know, for the level of detail, it's a project home, so it's the fixtures and fittings are basic, but it's still very, very beautifully done, and it's a great product. If I was to try and build the same thing here in Australia, it would cost easily $1 million, you know?
Mm.
So, and then I was, like any big city, properties are always going to be sort of sky high, cost per square meter, that is. So I just started to just sort of dip my toes in and have a look at, what it would be to buy somewhere in Tokyo and actually have somewhere as a base that we could stay at, outside of Narita, but just a bit closer to Tokyo. So I started doing some research, and then I came across your website, and started to sort of look a bit more seriously. I think last year I had a bit of a rude awakening from you guys when, I had expectations as to what property prices would be, but I was sort of looking a bit more rural. That's totally, totally understand that.
Still not as bad as Australia, I'd say, even in at least suburban Tokyo is not as bad as Australia.
Yeah, Australia's still quite up there. I think the main difference in Australia and Japan is obviously, the big capital growth. And I think it's Australian people are more inclined to do DIY themselves. And I think property is, it's like a national pastime. Everybody's into it. Everybody's interested. You're at that stage in Australia where all of the older buildings that were built in the sort of early 20th century, all of those properties need renovating now. There's new generations of people moving in, and people's the way people live has changed. They want more space, they want more open space. It's just at the moment in Sydney over the last sort of 20 years, it's just sort of time to redevelop those properties and start changing the face of the cities in Australia. So it's just a sort of a unique time,
That keeps you busy, I'm betting.
Yeah, no, we're very busy. Normally we try to book projects in 6 months in advance. At the moment we're booked out for the rest of this year. And I'm just in negotiations at the moment with some families about starting projects in 2022. So ideally we would have 2 or 3 projects running over $1 million, and sort of when we get halfway through those projects, we would start sort of talking with architects, and we would get contacted to see sort of what our availability is, and you know, those types of things. So it's yeah, it's you know, it's all a balancing act. But yeah, look, it's enjoyable. We're lucky. I do enjoy my job. I enjoy renovating. I enjoy building. Yeah. You know, having that you know, turning something from something that's into, you know, in disrepair, and just, you know, adding value to that property. And it's yeah, it's great. It's what sort of keeps us going. And yeah,
how do you find that? How did COVID affect your business there? I mean, it's getting better now, but what were people having more time on their hands because they were home and not ordering more projects, or were people financially hurt and ordering less? So
actually, yeah, such a funny thing. I didn't take one day off due to COVID. I sort of secretly had hoped I'd get like a couple of weeks off where builders and people in the construction industry could actually stay at home.
Yeah.
I can't say it hasn't affected us, because it's affected the whole world.
Yeah.
Where it's affected us was that I had a project for about $1.4 million, and those clients had the finances in place. But I think in early January 2020, they had started to get cold feet because of the, you know, everything that was going on. And then February, they sort of said, we were due to start in February. And in February, I got a phone call. It was the homeowners, and they basically said, look, John, we're not going to go ahead at this stage. We really don't know what's going to happen with COVID. We're a little bit worried. You know, we're taking on this mortgage. You know, we refinanced, and it doesn't make sense for us to actually do this big job now. So that was the only job we actually lost on, sort of set us back sort of a better month. And you know, during that time, you know, I had offers from several different other clients that wanted to do smaller jobs. So sort of February, March, April, we started to get a lot of inquiries.
Yeah.
About, can you come replace our kitchen? Can you come and redo our bathroom? Can you come and do a first floor addition? So, you know, all of the people that are actually staying at home now are like, well, hang on a second. I'm at home every day. I didn't realize that this house wasn't really working that well for me. I'd love to do this, or I'd love to do that. And, you know, we need an extra bedroom. We need to really reform the kitchen. So we were actually inundated with inquiries about new work.
Yeah.
Which was pretty good for us.
It's really interesting how it's affected different places and different, I think probably different people from different jobs and walks of life in totally different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know there's a lot of unemployment here. And you know, the government obviously did some incentives that really helped us sort of prop up businesses, if you like. They had a job keeper scheme, and, they had they paid employees, they paid employers to pay their employees. So they subsidized that up to, from memory, I think it was about 75% of.
Yeah, that's what I read.
Yeah. And then employers would just have to top it up if they so wished. During the time, we were sort of committed to two projects anyway.
Mm.
So we had enough to sort of, you know, spread the load a little bit. So we were, you know, we were sort of insulated from it, which is quite unique, you know. So yeah. Pretty thankful for that, actually.
All right. So back to Japan. So you've had a look around. I saw that you've been looking mainly on the English websites that happen to publish real estate listings.
Before
we dive into it, just bear in mind that they're not always a full representation of what's happening in the market. They're usually actually, because they're selective in the agents that can publish there, because those are only the realtors who can actually service foreign clientele, and there's not too many of those.
Mm.
So they'll tend to focus on particular offerings from particular realtors. Whereas if you actually, I can't remember if I sent you the link to the normal Japanese websites that we usually look through. You just get a wider picture if you actually work with Google Translate. I mean, not all of it is obviously accurate, but if you work with Google Translate and look at the actual native Japanese websites, not only this is the selection greater, but you'll find that the types of properties that they tend to publish can be a bit different.
Okay.
So just with that in mind, I'll start with the deal analysis spreadsheet that I prepared based on your first few samples.
Yeah.
We'll just go through those first, and then we'll drill down. But feel free to pause me as I rattle on at any point if you want to ask something. Just give me a sec.
Can you still see me? I'm just going to change the screen for a second. Are you still able to see me?
Yep.
Okay, great. I'm just opening your email.
I'll share that on my screen here. Are you seeing it?
Oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
I'm just wondering why. Okay. So we'll start with this one. Let me actually minimize our faces out of here. Okay. So this one in Yokohama, didn't have too many issues with it, aside from the fact that, there was no floor plan available, but I'm guessing that should be easily retrievable once we contact the listing agent. I'm just wondering with the location, whether that's going to be suitable for short-term rentals, which I think actually before we dive into those, could you lay out your plan for me again? Because you mentioned short-term rentals, but then you've sort of gone off it, I think, in one of our last conversations. So what were you actually planning to do? What's your plan, or what are your few plans if you've got a few?
Look, ultimately, the plan was I wanted to relocate to Japan, ultimately. But prior to doing that, I wanted to, you know, possibly get two properties, maybe three, with a view to, you know, renting those properties and trying to, start to build up some capital in Japan, in Japanese yen. And then at some stage, at some point in time, try to reform some of these apartments, whether it's a new kitchen or a new bathroom, little things like that, little touches that I can add in that, you know, I sort of had high hopes of trying to add value to these properties. But again, I think I was wrong in that case because of, you know, the strict Aircraig sort of rules in Japan and sort of, you know, doing those things doesn't necessarily translate to more income. It just probably translate to, you know, letting your apartment a little bit quicker.
What we'll find, I mean, they do tend to raise the rent in most cases, but not nearly as much as it'll actually cost to renovate.
Yeah.
So the percentage yield, if you factor in the cost of the renovation cost on top of the purchase price, the percentage yield is not going to rise. In some cases, it's actually going to drop. But you will definitely find tenants quicker for nicer apartments. That's always true.
Yeah.
And also, if and when you do want to get into short-term rentals, the nicer the place is, the easier it is to find guests. And then you can charge more for nicer places. I mean, significantly more.
Yeah.
But with short-term rentals legislation in Japan, you will either be limited to monthly leases with an actual lease in place in a minimum of 1 month.
Yeah.
Or if you want to go the real hardcore short-term like Airbnb and just check-ins and check-outs without leases and actually having guests, then you're looking at compliance and management companies that need to be licensed and they need to have staff within a certain distance from the property 24/7. So it's a bit more of a hands-on, and there's a bit more of planning required if you want to go that way.
Mm. Well, I mean, the short-term rentals sort of did really excite me. There were a couple of, studio apartments, I believe they're called One Room, in Shinjuku, When COVID lifts, you know, it's a very desirable place to be. And if it means spending a little bit more money to get something in that location, it sort of makes sense to me financially, provided the short-term leasing can be put in place. I'm just sort of, when I was doing some research on Airbnb itself, I checked the comments of of these short-term leases, and it's normally only you know, positive feedback to obviously great you know, Japanese landlords renting these places, but it's quite often one person that they refer to, like, oh, thank you, Aki-chan, you know, your place was amazing. I mean, for me, I'm trying to work out, well, who is Aki-chan? Is she the homeowner? If she's the homeowner and she lives in the local area, she's cutting out the management company for the short-term leases, and she's probably just tending to herself.
In most cases,
So I guess, I would sort of a five-year plan to say at that point in time, I would hope I would be in Japan, and at that stage, I could take over the management myself. If there is an issue with plumbing or carpentry, I could sort of tend to it myself. And those are the types of things that I was sort of considering, and I, in my fantasy land, had hoped that that's the way it would sort of play out, you know?
Well, that's doable, but again, you'll have to stay, I think officially you have to either live in the property or very close to it. Yeah. So there's a limit to how scalable that sort of operation can be. So you can only live close to one or two or maybe three apartments. Once you run out of you know, potential places to purchase in your vicinity, you will have to outsource management. Yeah. And that's doable as well. I mean, I don't know if you've checked into some of our clubhouse rooms, but one of the ladies that usually hosts the panel with us is actually, that's what she does, especially in and around the Tokyo area. She helps a lot of expats when they're away from home to lease the place and manage the place. And she is a licensed manager.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
And she's not the only one. So that's doable. But they will be charging you 20 to 30% of the gross rental income. So if you are in a position to do it yourself and you've got the bandwidth to deal with it, but otherwise, if you're building a large portfolio, then definitely I would outsource management if it's the short-term rentals you're going with, same as you would do with normal property managers.
Yeah.
So that's all doable. So, okay. So from this perspective, the properties that we're looking at here, we're just thinking about long-term leases at the moment and maybe just slightly discuss the potential for short-term in the future. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So with this one, my only reservation at the moment is I don't know if it will be suitable for short-term rentals because the location is not super central. Yokohama tends to be 2, 3, 4 stations that are central and the rest is very suburban.
Yeah.
So it's a very large city, but Japan's second biggest city. But aside from central, all of it is pretty much suburban and it's already a fair distance from Tokyo. So unless you get a short-term tenant that actually wants to be in Yokohama and not somebody who's just staying there because it's close to Tokyo, you need to consider the distance to the city center.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, maybe short-term rentals, not that attractive. Now, the other thing I want to say about these spreadsheets is this is all assuming that you're working through us. Or someone like us who can bridge the gap between you and the realtors and you and the property managers and can handle building management. Bear in mind that if you are going to be living in Japan at some point, I guess Tomoko at least would probably be able to at least wrap her head around just receiving a monthly report from the property manager and you know, relaying to you any issues that they might want to relay.
Yeah.
So if and when that becomes an option for you, and you can just remove, you're still seeing my screen, right?
Yeah, I can still see it, yeah.
So you can take off this segment here, which is our fee for portfolio management. And that's assuming that you can deal with building management on your own and you can deal with the property manager on your own and insurance and the property tax and that sort of thing.
Yep.
And the other thing is if you do happen to get access, I mean, there are Tokyo realtors who can definitely service foreigners. Emil, another guy on our host panel in the clubhouse room actually does that, but he mainly deals with family homes, not necessarily with investment properties. And when you get onto other English speaking agents, so they're really like any other realtor. I mean, they're Japanese, so they're not going to swindle you or, you know, sell you lemons, but they're not necessarily going to be, it's not going to be in their full interest to constantly disclose anything that you might want to think about before purchasing. Because they are interested in closing a sale, particularly if they are the ones listing the property and they're not working with another agent, in which case they get the full commissions from both buyer and seller.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So it is, in Tokyo specifically, it is probably possible to find some agents that you can work with directly. So in case you do that, this section here is our minimum, because this one is under 5 million yen, it's just our minimum cap rate for representing you through the purchase.
Yeah.
So assuming you work with a realtor director directly, you can get rid of that. And then the worst case scenario would be 15% purchase cost instead of 50% plus 3,000 Australian or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right. So that does, whoops, what have I done? So that does bring your value up slightly. So from 4 to 5%. But that's, as long as the rent price stays the same and as long as building fees over here don't go up, which obviously they will over time.
Yeah.
And vacancy, maintenance, repairs, these are all expenses that eat into your yield as well. So this one, let's call it 4 to 5%. With us, if you are capable of coming to Japan and Tomoko can sit with you and do the settlement contract and explain everything that they're reading in Japanese to you, then you might be able to get away with us just consulting you on an hourly basis if you want feedback on something.
Okay.
In which case, again, the purchase costs would be a little bit cheaper. So this one is, 4 to 5%, depending on how much of our services you need involved. Location not super suitable for short-term rentals. And I'd like to see the floor plan just to know. Generally speaking, buildings that are constructed after 1990 or 91 tend to have a separate toilet and bath, which is quite attractive to Japanese tenants.
Absolutely.
And I also like to see the floor plan. The which direction the balcony is facing, that's easy enough to find out. South or southeast or south-southeast is the most popular because it's got the most sunlight. But the other thing that I'd see in the floor plan is whether there's a laundry bay installed. If there isn't, and next time your tenant moves out, you might want to consider putting that in. It's usually not too expensive. It'll be between 700 to 1100 Australian to put in a laundry bay with drainage and a dedicated tap for water and so forth.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and especially for single females who don't like to take their underwear out to the laundromat, that's going to attract more potential tenants.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm wondering, if we could see the floor plan, that would help me. But the other thing with this one is, if you're looking for 4 to 5%, why not go for central Yokohama or suburban Tokyo? Why would you go suburban Yokohama for that?
Well, I guess the thing that sort of reeled me in was on this particular website that I found the property, it said 10% yield. Now, I knew that everything had to be taken away from that. That was the gross yield. But again, I somehow had come to my own conclusion that 10% yield would be reduced to 6% yield, which was obviously wrong again. So I guess that's one of the things that sort of attracted it to me. And then when I checked the closest train line, it was okay. It was a 10-12 minute walk. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can see that. That's okay.
This one's 7 minutes actually.
7 minutes.
Yeah.
And that sort of was another tick. I guess for this one, the short term leasing one, I'd sort of gone off that idea for this particular apartment. Just because, it was Yokohama, it was sort of, I had sort of imagined that it would be somebody, local, because it is actually tenanted at the moment, I believe.
Yes.
So,
The other thing would, it might help. I'll just break down the purchase costs for you here on the side so that you know how we reach that 15%. That'll probably help you, because that's a worst case assumption. It will eventually probably be less than that.
Yeah.
So I'll leave our fee in there for a moment. So the realtor fee is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax, right? So 3.3% plus 66,000 yen, because tax is at the moment 10% consumption tax.
That's like GST. So that gives us, well, it depends on the price of the property. Like in this case, for example, it's going to bring the realtor fee closer to 4.5% with the 66, right? So let's say, let's call it 4.5. We like to estimate a worst case, depending on the price, a worst case scenario of 5.5%, right? For the realtor fee, which is what they charge for properties that are under 2 million yen. And then as the property gets more expensive, it goes down from there. So let's call it the worst case 5.5. Then you've got your legal and registration costs. And these vary depending on the official evaluation of the property. So the official eval is probably going to be different to market price, in the sense that it takes them, they update the prices officially every year when they send out the property tax statement, but their official evaluations even at that time tend to be a bit behind the times.
Yeah.
So if a particular area has gone up in value, you're going to be paying, your official eval is going to be smaller than what it actually cost. And if it goes down in value, it's vice versa. And that affects your purchase tax and your property tax. So the legal and registration fee, and sorry, and also the ownership change fee. So your legal and registration fees, they can vary a lot if the economy has gone significantly contracted or expanded in a particular area, and the property market usually follows suit. So it's difficult for us to estimate in advance, but it, for these level of prices, it's probably going to be anywhere from 3 to 7 or 8%.
Okay.
So again, we factor in a worst case of about 8%.
I think so.
And then just what have I done here? We don't need a link. Oh, it's just underlined. And then you're going to get your purchase tax bill anywhere from 6 to 12 months after settlement, depending on how busy things are at the Legal Affairs Bureau and what their jurisdiction is. Some of them issue those bills in March. Some of them do it in December. So depending on when you purchase and where you purchase and how busy they are. And that's, again, that's an average, and it varies a little bit, not as much as registration fees, but it does vary a little bit depending on the official eval. We haven't seen it go far beyond 2.6%, which is what we usually use for worst case here.
And that's per annum?
No. That's the purchase tax. It's a one-off.
Oh, that's the purchase. Okay.
Yeah. It's a one-off. And then it depends on whether you've got our fees to put on to add on top of that or not. So if you don't, let me just sum that up. So without our fees, I was saying 15% there because this will usually be closer to 7%, worst case. We have seen in some severe cases, like Sapporo, for example, took a big hit in property prices, and it took the government a good 3 or 4 years to catch up. So we still factor in 8%, but I can comfortably say it's probably going to be a worst case 15%.
Okay.
Right? And then with us, our fee is basically 5% plus tax. But in cases of cheaper properties that are under 5 million, we do have a minimum cap of 275,000, which is 5% of 5 million plus tax.
Oh, right?
So for the cheaper properties, you might go worst case if you're using us slightly under 20%. Or if the property is more expensive, it's going to be up to maybe 20%. And as they get more expensive, we discount our fees and the realtor's fees become lower percentage-wise. And also the legal and registration fees tend to be lower because the property lawyers, judicial scriveners also have their own minimums. So, I mean, I'll show you how it works once we get into the rest of the properties. But for this one in particular, let me just move us out of the way again. For this one in particular, we're assuming a worst case of 15% purchase cost plus, if you need us, 275,000, which is what brings you down to this 411.
Okay.
Okay. So moving on to the next one. This one is in a very good area. Meguro-ku in Tokyo is one of the best areas, and the interior, as you can see, is well done. The kitchen is maybe not that outdated, but slightly. It's got a big bath, which is a phenomenal bonus in Japanese apartments. It's quite rare. Separate toilet and bath. Not separate toilet and bath. which was a bit strange for me because this property was 1993 and they are supposed to be separate toilets and bath for the ones built after 1990. So yeah. I just wrote there to confirm the build year. It might be maybe just on the borderline, but I haven't seen too many that are past 91 that don't have them separate. So I'm just wondering about the build year. The average rent, sorry, go ahead.
It's probably just a greedy developer who didn't want to, you know, unless he's told by legislation they have to separate the toilet and the ofuro, they're probably just going to bang it in together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a legislative matter. They can definitely build them still together if they want to. It's just the tenants these days are just not going for those.
Okay.
So the only people you would find in these older properties are really, really low income earners or really elderly folk who are really used to it from day one kind of thing. Anyone in the young professional entry level salaryman kind of bracket would probably very much prefer to have a separate toilet and bath.
Yeah.
And that's quite an expensive renovation. You probably know best from what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this one, how many buildings are in that, or how many apartments are in this property?
That's the other thing, that the English listing websites don't actually tell us that. The Japanese websites usually clearly state that, but the English websites don't. So I can just make a guess looking at the exterior, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 units per floor times 4 a floor, maybe up to 24 units or so. The ground floor also, I can't see because of the cars, whether it has units or it has shops down there. I'm not sure what's the situation. So I'd say probably 10 to 20 apartments.
Mm.
This one's on the fourth floor, but it's quite small in size, which leads me to believe there are no any particularly wide apartments or penthouses on the top floor. So probably the same sort of structure as the lower ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say 10 to 20. Balcony is facing south, which is good. Because it's on the fourth floor, I'm wondering, the listing doesn't specify if it has an elevator, because if it doesn't, fourth floor in Japan is what we call third floor in Australia and other countries. So they count the ground floor as number one.
Yeah.
So whoever's leasing this one has to climb up 3 flights of stairs. So right there, you've probably ruled out most of your elderly tenants.
Yeah.
Which in Japan is a very large percentage of the population. And also single moms, sometimes in these small apartments, you get a single mom with a baby or a toddler kind of thing, and they wouldn't be too thrilled climbing out with a, you know, a child in hand plus 5 bags of shopping.
No.
So you just, fourth floor does get a bit challenging. Fourth and fifth floor, which is the top that you can get without an elevator by law, is a bit more challenging finding tenants for. That's my main concern with this one.
Hmm.
Now, the average rent from what we've seen on the internet seems to be somewhere between 60,000 to 70,000 yen for this one. So looking at a best case scenario of 70,000 yen, you're looking at very, very low returns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now the interior is lovely. I do like the interior. For short-term stay, the area would do fabulously. It's a great area. So I would definitely go into this one if you think that you could lease it out comfortably throughout, you know, a large part of the year, in which case you might conceivably go up to 120 or 130. And then it does start to look a bit more attractive.
Okay.
But that's a maybe, and it's definitely a maybe now when we've got COVID going on. So, I mean, if the most we'd be able to get out of this one, maybe if we put in a few appliances and furniture and so forth, is maybe 75. Still pretty low. If I take out our fee, which is at this price level is 4%. So if I take off our fee, we're assuming a worst case purchase cost scenario of 13%. We'll probably be closer to something like 11 or 10 by the time you settle.
Mm.
And again, if you don't need us for management of the portfolio, management of the property, manager of the third parties involved and so forth, if you can deal with them directly, you can take this down as well. But it doesn't really make a huge difference because this one is priced, I think, a bit too highly.
Yeah, I'm starting to see what you're saying. I guess when I looked at this one, I seen Meguro, you know, I was thought, yeah, it's close to, it's close enough to, you know, Nakameguro. So I was like, yeah, okay, you know, maybe short-term lease.
The location is fabulous. Don't get me wrong. The location is absolutely fantastic. But I think, I mean, look, if we could bring them down to even, let's say, 12 million, which is a bit of a stretch maybe for the seller, but I think would be a bit more reasonable, then it's starting to look a lot better at 70 or 75.
Yeah.
For central Tokyo to give this sort of return, even if you do need to, oh, sorry, this is without us again. Let's bring that back to including us. 4% for Meguro for a unit that's nicely renovated in 1993. That's what I would expect, right?
Yeah.
And if you need our help here, 4%. 75, if we manage to get that far, 4.3%. And we can, I mean, we can try to tweak it, but it's not going to be a big income generator without short-term leases.
Yeah, without short-term leasing. Let's say, just as a hypothesis, imagine for a second that you could convince your neighbors to do a short-term lease.
Not going to happen. If you're talking about strictly short-term, like Airbnb without a lease, no.
Yeah.
They've got, the owner unions will just never go for it. They absolutely, 99.9% of the buildings will not do it. The only option you've got is if you own the entire building, and if that area, because there are also judicial municipalities that can allow or disallow throughout the year, through certain portions of the year. Some of them only allow it on weekends. So that does require a bit more investigation. But if you're talking about the co-owned block situation, strata, where each unit is owned by a different person, don't expect that to happen. You can do monthly leases because there's no really legal leg for them to prohibit that. It's just a standard lease by law.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at monthly leases, that's where I'm thinking you might be able to get, say, 120,000 for it, especially if you're leasing to a foreigner.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, we're not an expert on short-term leases, but there are things that you can do to try and tweak the income. But again, it depends on, it's seasonal, and it depends on what the supply is like in the area. The more apartments they are, you have to go by whatever they're offering. Otherwise, you're not going to get any guests. Mm. Yeah. The only advantage you might have because you're a foreigner is if you set up your own advertising platform and your own marketing machine, advertise specifically to foreigners who are coming to Tokyo and want to stay in that area, then you've probably got a bit of a leg up on other people who are offering monthly rentals in that area but are catering only to Japanese or Japanese and Chinese or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But that's going to be quite hands-on. It's not going to be a full-time business, but it's definitely not going to be passive income by any stretch.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, ultimately the goal would be to, you know, obviously the some sort of a good passive income. But yeah, I totally hear what you're saying.
So if we're talking about passive, I'd say 70,000 to be on the safe side. It looks like 60 to 70, but let's say that you do the best that we can to bring it up to 70. And again, it depends on what's happening at the market at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on whether you're going to be, I'm assuming you might start with the purchase through us and the management through us. And then at some point when you move to Japan, you could probably remove this side of the cost, the monthly representation, in which case you would be scratching 4.2. I mean, these are worst case scenarios. So let's say by settlement, we hope to maybe get closer to 15%, not 17 or even 14%. But still, you're not going to, I mean, it's not leaps and bounds you're going to be making by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'll move on to the next one. This one's 1987. I'm not sure if I've sent you a link to the new legislation coming in for properties that are going to be hitting 40 years old and over.
You actually did, and I read through that thoroughly. Thanks again for sending that information. And it's for the want of a better phrase, it's a bit like the Wild West, because we don't know exactly how we know it's going to be a lot stricter. As you said in your article, but we just don't know exactly how strict it's going to be or what those fees are going to be. You know, they might, some buildings I know I'm a builder. Some buildings will just be, they'll just tear them down. You won't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's not a matter of, I don't think they're going to force anyone to tear them down, but there will be a new system where there's going to be a certificate for proper management or not.
Yeah.
So what's probably going to happen is the rare cases in which buildings are really managed perfectly from the get-go, there's not going to be much change. The supply for the certificate, they'll get it and everything will be hunky-dory. But the ones who are being, and it's not even necessarily mismanaged, it's just a case of, you know, the whoever, they go through a rotating head of owner union roster, and it's a different person every year. Some of them care a bit more, some of them care a bit less. In buildings where the owners are the occupiers, it's a better situation because they care about the building and they're probably managing it a little bit better. But if the building is owned mainly by investors who each own a single unit and are just milking them for all their worth, they're definitely going to have to step up based on whatever the new criteria is going to be. And then either they will, in which case building fees will suddenly jump up. We've seen cases, even without this new system, we've seen cases where building fees were suddenly raised by 30 or 40 or 50%. So if you look at this one, for example, if and when it reaches that point to qualify for the certificate, they might say bring it up to just 16,000. Yeah. That's already taking you down by 0.7%, right? If they bring up the reserve fund contribution and the management fee, let's say it goes up to 18,000, goes down further still. And the other option is that they'll choose not to comply and not to get the certificate, in which case your resale value, and this one we're actually already seeing, what we're seeing is the properties that are reaching that 40-year mark are suddenly being sold at heavy discounts.
Yeah.
Probably because we haven't seen this until 2 or 3 years ago, so this is probably, we're assuming, because people are concerned about what's going to happen at that point if their resale price suddenly falls off the cliff and this goes down to 4,000, right? So whoever buys it from you will be happy. But if you haven't generated enough income by that time, and that time is just dangerously close when you're buying into something that's already 34 years old on purchase. So you've got maybe 2-3 years to milk some value off it before you're getting a bit too uncomfortably close to where the value will drop significantly. And that's the only thing we're concerned about. If and when the legislation is actually fully fleshed out, which will be probably sometime next year, and we might see that it's not a big deal, but if, and just going off the legislation that they put out in 2018 for Airbnb, which they did something similar. They sort of issued vague warnings to that effect that it's going to change, it's going to change, it's going to change. Everybody who was running Airbnb operations was panicking throughout that year or two. And then when they finally did put out the legislation, it really put a damper on those operations because everything changed. They suddenly had to comply with a million different things that just didn't exist beforehand.
Yeah.
So it may not be the case with this legislation, but the risk that it is a bit too great for us to comfortably recommend properties at this point that are beyond 30 years old.
Yeah.
Because we just want to see our customers be able to get at least 5, 6, 7 years of value out of them before they consider reselling, which I'm not comfortable with in this case.
No, fair enough. I guess the only positive thing I can take from this is I am a builder. When I look at the returns on this one, it's obviously, you know, it's actually a bit more attractive because it's up to whatever $92 per week. It's 5.25% best case.
This is worst case.
That's worst case. If I was going to purchase this property, I would actually go, and I want to talk to you about this a bit later on, but I would go and inspect it myself, and I would actually hire a structural engineer who lives locally. And I would say to the structural engineer, you know, let's walk around this property together. We're obviously looking for cracks. We're looking for, existing damage that may sort of need to be remediated in the near future. I would go through the balconies, you know, possibly if it's possible to speak to the neighbors and ask them what they, you know, thought of the property.
It's not going to happen. Those are the kind of tools. Not going to happen in Japan. I should probably just let you know in advance. Okay. You don't knock on doors. You don't talk to neighbors. They tend to freak out. Oh. And in some cases, they'll actually call the police if someone's entered the lobby without permission.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
In case of co-owned buildings, what we do, sorry, I just got a postal delivery. I'll just open the door.
Yeah, no problem.
Give me a sec.
Hi, hello.
Yep, sorry, I'm with you.
No, it's okay. I do miss the Japanese postal system. So efficient. So good.
Except when they come on a Sunday morning, right? So yeah, I mean, the owner union will usually, what we go off is the owner union reports, and we want to see if they've done proper renovations, at least in the last 10 years, because they'll often not have older history than that. They tend to sometimes change management companies if the management company doesn't do very well. So sometimes we only get 10 years back, but we want to see that in those 10 years, the exterior, the roof, if there's an elevator, the elevator, we want to see that the big ticket items have been done, or that the reserve funds pool that they've collected allows for at least one or two of those. Otherwise, it's a red flag for that for us. And then in the case of those older units, it's even more of a red flag. I mean, you can bring an inspector over to walk around the building. And if we're lucky, if there's no secure keypad entry there, or if it looks like they're not, you know, too strict about that, or if the realtor allows us, comes with us and allows us to enter the building interior, we're going to be able to look around. This property is vacant, so you can definitely look at the interior of that property, but it's not going to give you any information about the state of the rest of the balconies and so forth.
No.
Yeah.
I guess... You sort of are relying heavily on, you know, people's due diligence and paperwork. And given that it is Japan, one would hope that it's better than what it needs to be.
Correct.
And then I guess just a visual inspection from the outside is that's the best I can do then, provided we can, you know, we can't get in, or, you know, we can get in. Great. But like you said, you just don't know. This looks.
We will be able to get into the building interior, yeah. So the stairway, the lobby, and so forth. We can definitely ask the realtor to show us around, if they're willing. I mean, some of them, especially in Tokyo, they get properties go very quickly, especially at this price range. So some of them will just not be very cooperative, because they can just sit on their bums and get offers without catering to us.
Yeah.
But in other cases where they're, you know, at least polite enough, or the price is high enough to for them to do go out of their way and go with us to the property and show us through the inside of the building and the interior of that particular unit, we will be able to do that. But whether you'll be able to do an actual structural inspection, it's probably only going to be of your unit's interior if it does happen, not of the entire building. For the entire building, you need the owner union to allow you to do that.
Yeah.
So aside from just looking around, don't expect to be able to do much.
Okay, fair enough.
And also this area, the other thing I noted out about this area, it's got a lot of people living there, but it's not a super popular area. One of Japan's seven execution chambers and a giant prison is there, one of the biggest prisons in Japan.
I just think that I obviously had no idea that was
yeah,
the case.
And the Japanese do tend to pay attention to these kinds of things, as you probably know. So the bad vibes around the neighborhood just make it less of a stellar area for tenancies. So with these sort of, I mean, I don't want to say bad neighborhood, because it is Japan. There's no ghettos and drug labs and people, you know, there's no shooting in the streets. But the types of tenants you get there are the people who can't afford to live anywhere else. So not the best tenant profile, and could be a bit harder to populate when it's vacant.
Okarimashita. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Mm. Plenty of those suburbs in Sydney, except... 1,000 times worse.
Well, minus the crime. There's no crime on the street, which can happen a fair bit in Sydney from memory. So.
Absolutely, yeah. It definitely can.
Okay, so I'll move on to the next one. Suginami Ward in Tokyo. That's a nice area again. We like this area. We've actually had quite a few clients purchase in that area. It's a nice corner unit. I like that. So you've got two directions. I know that the I think that's a laundry bay there on the balcony. So that's probably already installed and out of the way, not bothering the tenant. So yeah, again, everything's okay except for the build year. I'm just, again, concerned about the build year.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. And this one is 7 floors. So there's even more management involved in taking care of the building compared to the previous one, which was 3 floors, maybe even self-managed. You know, instead of a building management company, then maybe all the owners just join together and order an inspection once in a while. And even when they do have to renovate, they're not looking at massive bills. But with this one, you're already getting to the point where you've got, what's that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 or 7 times 7, 50 units. I'm guessing it's a reinforced concrete block, not a wooden structure like the previous one.
Yeah.
So that obviously takes more maintenance. I mean, it's more sturdy, but it does require more maintenance on a regular basis and more expensive one at that. With the build year, again, I just don't know what the new legislation will do. So that's the only thing I'm concerned about with this one. Returns-wise, for that area, again, it's reasonable and quite normal. If we take off our fee here, which again is 4% at this level, you're looking at maybe 14, let's call it 13%. Worst case, if you buy directly from a realtor, if you take off our portfolio management fee, 4.4% as it stands. But again, I don't know what the 2022 will bring as far as expenses are concerned and as far as resale value is concerned. The building, from a very superficial glance, the building does seem to be reasonably well maintained. I'm not seeing anything drastic there. I'm just bringing it to the front. Just from a general view, it looks like at least the exterior is being done reasonably well. So they might not be up for huge hikes in building fees with the new legislation fees, but without actually looking at renovation history and so forth, I just can't tell you that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, it's obviously the location really attracted me. Yeah. I do definitely agree with what you're saying with the, you know, the taller buildings. You know, for me, you know, the location really caught my attention and I was like, oh, you know, this is great, you know. You know, the more I think about it.
The interior is beautiful too, by the way. I like what they've done with the accented wallpaper there and that. We also do that in renovations that we do. The other thing to consider is, let's say a building like this, right? The 3 floors and that's sitting, we don't know how big the land plot is, but let's say a 3-floor building does reach the point where it costs too much in building fees or it costs too much to renovate and they don't want to renovate anymore. It's a lot easier for a developer to swoop in and take this one off your hands at a reasonable or close to reasonable price.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, if and when it does reach the point where it doesn't become very cost effective to keep renovating it, it's a lot more difficult for a developer to A, compensate 40 or 50 unit owners, and B, pay for the demolishing and removal of the reinforced concrete building, which is a much, much bigger endeavor than it is like, this one's 3-floor wooden building, very feasible for development costs. This one's a bit of a, they'll have to really make sure that they really like the land plot, that they can really build something profitable enough on the land plot, because 1986 building codes and area, also residential zoning has changed. So it may be that on the same size land plot these days, they're not going to be able to build anything that high. It's actually quite likely that they won't be able to.
Yeah. Okay.
So it becomes an exercise of, well, is it worth it for a developer to purchase it as is? Or what they often do in these cases where they want to purchase the land plot, but they don't want to compensate everyone, is They'll buy two or three units at normal market prices, which gives them two or three votes on the owner union. And then they'll slowly try to convince the other owners in the meetings or try to get one of their owners into an influential position in the owner union and so forth, and slowly talk the people into just like scare tactics. Are you going to lose all of your value if you don't sell it to us now? And they'll end up convincing, all they need is 80% approval by building owners. Once they get that, you're really left with no choice but to sell to them at a really cutthroat price.
Yeah.
Which is often a strategy that they employ with these bigger, older blocks.
I actually know a guy who did it here in Sydney in Bondi. So yeah. he's a builder, but he has a very, very prestigious property on Bondi Beach Road, which is worth a fortune. But he had one apartment, and it's only a block of six apartments, which makes it amazing. And he bought a second apartment, and actually the building did need a lot of repairs, which he was willing to do. But when they actually got quotes to do the work, some of the tenants had been sort of scared. Some of the owner occupiers had been scared off, and then he offered to buy them out.
Yeah.
And now he owns the whole block. So I know exactly, you know, how that goes.
That's the legit way to do it, right? I just don't know.
That was legit, but yeah.
Well, we've had cases in the past where this was done to us or to clients that own properties that we help them purchase. And they go hardcore. Like they suddenly the head of the owner union who was handling this whole transaction with the developer suddenly was voted out in quick succession after they found out that he was either receiving some sort of gifts or bribes or, I mean, they were pretty active in trying to force people to sell at a low price, and they have succeeded. I think there wasn't any official complaint filed. It's just the owner union head was suddenly replaced with somebody else, and the other person just didn't do any sort of negotiation with the developer. But at that point, it was too late. They were already in there, and they already had the voting rights.
Yeah.
So we ended up selling. We didn't sell at the loss. We sold at the profit just because of the rental income. I mean, the customers have been holding it for quite some time before that.
Yeah,
but price-wise, they sold at about 40% less from what they purchased, which shouldn't have been the case in that area. So it does happen. Mm. So yeah, again, the only thing I don't like about this one is the year of build. Just a slight concern there.
Yeah. Okay.
And moving on, again, Katsutaso. It's the again the prison and execution chamber.
Yeah, this is a building that was close to that neighborhood.
Yeah. And this one's built 1990, so we're not quite at the danger level there. I don't really like the looks of the exterior on this one, though. Looks really, see all these little rust spots at the bottom of the pipes there and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's not a very attractive building.
It's not an attractive building. In that area, I wouldn't expect them to be very attractive. Again, nobody moves to that residential suburb for quality of living. The other thing is this one is a first floor unit, which I can't see clearly in this picture, but if it doesn't have secure sort of keypad entry to the building, there single females would not go for that.
Yeah, okay.
For security issues, they're worried about people being able to gain access to the windows or the balconies or whatnot. Otherwise, not too bad. I would definitely try to bring the price down a little bit if you were going for this one, maybe say 7.5 mil. Whoops, what have I done?
Looks like there's a yield of 54%, which...
No. I would definitely try to bring the price down. In this area, I'd want to see it as close to 6% as possible.
Yes, okay.
It's very suburban, and it's a particularly... not popular residential area. I mean, people still have to live there. You're probably going to get tenants, but I mean, look, this rent could go down over time. What's the other one we saw in Katsushika was bigger, and that was leasing for 52,000. So I'm wondering, this one's a bit more central than the other one, but still. I mean, look, I would try to, assuming the rent is indeed 56 and the tenant's been there for a while and there's no, doesn't look like they've got any immediate plans to move out, I would try to bring the price down if you're interested in that one. And again, this area would definitely wouldn't be my choice for potential short-term rentals.
Okay.
And also not for, I mean, Tokyo generally is poised to grow price-wise if the economy, if and when the economy does well.
Yes. And that's what I'm sort of banking on as well. You know, all of the feedback I've heard from sort of a couple of colleagues and yourself, in fact, is that, you know, capital growth is, forget about it. It's just, you can't rely on it.
Correct.
I don't know, as my coworker friend said to me today, he says, you really want this to work. And I said, well, yeah, I do. I really believe that, you know, as we all know, Japan has opened up the restrictions have come down, and there will be more, you know, foreigners moving to Japan. And, you know, it's what goes up must come down, and what goes down must come back up again, you know. So
fingers crossed, but we're not seeing it immediately, right? And COVID definitely didn't help with that as well. And also the other thing, I mean, yes, Tokyo prices went up between, say, 2012 to 18, even 19. But as long as that economic growth, you know, the general GDP growth doesn't trickle down to salaries, we can't raise the rents, right?
Yes.
And if we can't raise the rent, there's a limit to how much property prices can go up. I mean, this is in Hong Kong where the people who live there can't afford to buy a place. I mean, it's the gap here between the upper and lower echelons is not as big as it is in other countries. So I don't see a bubble bursting here. I just see a ceiling to how far Tokyo prices can go up before salaries start going up. And that hasn't happened significantly yet.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it's a good tool and a mechanism that the Japanese government have introduced because of the difference. Especially with the taxes, you know, trying to, you know, the capital gains taxes and stuff like that, they will sort of hit you hard with those. And
It's not a speculative environment at all. They've done well with that. But I mean, look, Tokyo prices before COVID were getting very close to what they were before the bubble burst, like 1991, 92. But rents are now close to half what they were when the bubble burst, right?
Mm.
So that huge gap is already there. I don't see how much higher. And look, this might not be a popular opinion. I know that a lot of people have faith only in Tokyo and Osaka, right? Personally, I just don't know how much further. I mean, there's no economic crashes or huge downturns in Japan. What happens is it just stops growing again, right?
Mm.
There's no bank crashes or massive layoffs or anything that would spell crisis economically, but how much further prices can go up in Tokyo and Osaka, I don't know. I would be far more comfortable speculating on potential price growth in Nagoya and Fukuoka, for example.
Yes.
Because they've still got a lot more room to grow to reach those levels.
Yeah.
Tokyo and Osaka, without salaries growth and rental growth, I just don't know how much longer it will continue to rise. It might not, I don't know. And the Olympics, if and when it happens, is just going to be a temporary boost.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't see that as continuing long term. So I don't know. It's a big question mark. And if we're not banking on growth, and again, even if Tokyo does grow, that particular area, I don't know how much it will. It's definitely not one of the city's finest.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, take the price here with a grain of salt when you do resell. And down the track, even if it's comfortably before that 10-year mark, which makes it difficult, I wouldn't expect price growth there. So I would definitely want to bring the price down because this is just unreasonable. I don't want to see this yield in that area. I'm comfortable with it in Shinjuku. I'm comfortable with it in Meguro, the other places we've looked at. Not in Katsushika. In Katsushika, I'm a lot more comfortable with 5, closer to 6 if we can.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And then this last one, I'm not even going to talk about this one. The build year is just,
okay.
For me, that's a massive no. Again, we aim to serve, right? Like whatever you tell us you want to buy, we'll end up facilitating for you. But if you're asking our opinion, I would definitely not buy in a 1974 building. And with this one particularly, I don't even have the exterior, so I've got no idea on how big the building is. I can sort of guess it's 5 floors. I don't know if it's concrete or not. I don't know how wide it is. So I don't know how easy or not easy it is for a developer to make an attractive offer on it down the track. So that for that year, if you were to buy, if you were to tell me that you want to buy the whole building and then you're comfortable with eventually demolishing it and repurposing the space for something else, that would be great. If you're looking at a single unit and you're subject to whatever the owner union is going to decide to do or not, I would definitely not go 1974.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the only thing, obviously, this one is the just the location.
Yeah, the location is good. We also don't know the rent price, right? I mean, the interior looks okay. It's done nicely, not as nice as some of the other places we looked at, but it's done reasonably well. It looks like a nice interior. The view isn't spectacular. I can just guess, but long-term 24 square meters in a good area in Tokyo, let's say 100,000. I mean, it's still a single apartment, right? You might be able to squeeze in a couple with a baby, but that would be pretty rare or not very likely. So what did I do? Did I do a million again? Yes, I did. Take one of those zeros off. So, I mean, look, it's really just still a bedroom. It's a relatively large bedroom for a Japanese apartment, but it's not that big because look at the separate toilet and bath here take up a fair bit of space.
Yeah.
So of those 24 square meters, this is what, maybe 16, 15?
Yeah.
Maybe even less than that. Mm. A very low earning couple, maybe, but usually it's going to be a singles apartment again, right?
Yeah.
And it's not fancy. I mean, it's a nice renovation. It's not super fancy. So a single person's apartment, even in the heart of Tokyo, maybe 100,000 if we're lucky, but I would probably assume something closer to 80,000. And the thing is, again, it's 1974, so I'm not sure how attractive the exterior is for somebody who's looking to rent at that price level. If they're paying 80 or 100,000, they would usually, especially being Japanese, they would usually opt for a smaller space in a nicer building.
Yeah, okay.
Because 1974 would probably, again, we haven't seen the exterior, but probably is not super attractive from the outside. And if you're talking about a single person who occasionally wants to bring a date over or something like that, they probably go for the nicer building, nicer apartment, even if it's smaller.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We would need to do some rent research, which is what I wrote down here, and to see what we could potentially get for it. You could definitely go the short-term rental way with this one, though. So if you're looking at short-term rental for Central Tokyo, again, you're hoping to get something like 120,000. I'm talking about monthly, yeah? Not Airbnb and
so on. Yeah, monthly, yeah.
So you're hoping to get something like 120,000, and then it becomes really attractive. But number one, I don't know when and how efficient monthly rentals are going to be post-COVID. I just don't have any idea about that at the moment. They're not doing well right now. And the other thing is the age of the building. I'm just more than slightly concerned about this age. 1987, you could maybe like twist my arm and I tell you, you know, maybe it's good for 5 years. This one, I haven't got a clue what's going to happen with it. We'd need to see the building's renovation history and the reports by the owners union to even begin to consider it. But my tendency is to say no to anything this old.
Okay.
Yeah. So did you want to look at any more specific examples from what you looked at? You can feed them all into this Excel sheet here, right? Like you can just grab the prices, the building fees and the prices and the rent prices if you've got them, put them here. That'll first and foremost give you the percentage yield. And then you can sort of go by what we've done here. So if you see that the building is over 10 million, factor in maybe 17% purchase costs. If it's really cheap like this one, put in 15 plus 275, or you can put in 20%. If it's close to 5 million, that'll be accurate enough. And then just play with that and see what the yield is like. But did you want to dig into any of those specifically?
Look, I think the only one that sort of made sense was, which was it? Was it the first or second one?
First email or second email, which one are we talking about?
Oh, sorry. The Yokohama property. That was from the first one, but then I sent another one.
In the same Excel sheet, you mean? This one?
On the same Excel sheet, but then also, so there was a possibility of this one, but I actually have a friend from Yokohama and I spoke to him about this property, and given his local knowledge, this building is close to where his parents live. And he said that this area is quite hilly.
Yep.
So
it looked like it in the pictures too. Yeah.
No. So he said to me, oh, look, it's okay, but it's very, very hilly. And that's where his comments were. So again, another sort of little flag that says, okay, you know what, it's, you know, people walking from here into the station, they're dreading the walk up the hill at the end of the day, you know.
So yeah, again, it depends on who the tenant is, right? This is suburban, so I wouldn't assume you'd have too many like salarymen who work in the city coming to live here, right? Most likely be elderly folk or really, really low income earners, like convenience store workers and so forth. So they're not going to be dragging, weekend travel suitcases up and down the road. So not necessarily a huge issues, but again, lower profile tenants. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess the second email.
Second email. Okay, so let me go up.
So the second email.
So you got three links there, right?
Yes. I think the first link was sort of closer to better train line in Yokohama.
Yep.
Let's see.
No, that's Kawasaki, not Yokohama.
Oh, it's Kawasaki?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, was this the one that's 55 minutes to Ginza? 45 minutes to Ginza?
Let me have a quick look. Doesn't say anything, but let me just bring up the address. Give me a second.
Forty-seven minutes to Shinagawa, or 55 minutes to Ginza.
You see that in the listing itself, or are you using Google Maps?
I was using Google Maps.
Okay, so I haven't run through that. Okay, so let me just look at the location itself. If it's Kawasaki, I'm usually a lot more happy about the fact that it's close to Haneda.
Yeah. So it was 7,200,000 yen.
Yep.
That's the
I'm seeing that. So yeah, it's, let's get a quick read on Haneda Airport. 43 minutes. Okay, so same sort of distance. 43, 45 minutes to everywhere, right? To Ginza, to Shibuya, to Haneda Airport. And then I wonder, let me just have a quick look at how far to Yokohama Station, because that's also a popular hangout for people who live in Kawasaki. So even shorter, 30 minutes or so to, plus the walk, 36 minutes to Yokohama Station. So it's a nice suburban location in between Tokyo, Kawasaki, and Haneda. We like it. Yeah, you with me?
Yeah. So this was the, I guess this was the other one. Yeah. I like this one as well. The bill year.
Let me put the prices in. Just give me a second. So I'm putting in 7.2 million. I'm putting in building fees of 9,200. And I'm putting in, does it say rental income?
Estimated annual rental income, 600,000. So
are you able to share your screen with me?
Yep. So give me a sec.
Oh, sorry.
Give me a sec. Can you see it now?
Not yet.
How about now?
Now. Yep.
So let me, I'll just get rid, I just copied the previous sheet. So let me get rid of all those pictures. And get rid of this text. And that was built 1993. And it's tenanted. Okay, so let's just ignore the text for a second. Just look at the numbers. So that's 7.2. 600,000 divided by 12, that gives us 50,000 rent. Building fee is 9.2. So that's not bad. The thing is with this one, if you're buying it directly, you're probably looking at 14% worst case purchase costs. Let's say you don't need us. If you don't need us, 5.5 at best. It's not suburban Tokyo. It's more like it's Kawasaki, but it is reasonable. And if you're looking at buying through us, it's probably going to be worst case cost, maybe 18%. And then you would need our management fee again. So 4.8 to 5.2 if you do take on management on your own at some point.
Yeah.
It's not bad, and I think the location would be attractive for short-term leases in the future as well. If it's 11-minute walk to the station with suitcases might be a bit of a stretch for some people, but it's not too bad compared to some of the places they rent out.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. The building does look well-maintained. I do like that.
Yeah, it's one of the bigger ones. It seems quite bright.
South facing balcony, so plenty of light. Long-term tenants will like that. Those things are meaningless for us. If you're looking at Tokyo, there's a convenience store anywhere, so we're not too concerned about that. I like the fact that it's broken up into looks like dining plus bedroom, right?
Yeah.
So right next to the kitchen there, if you look at the floor plan, there's a dining area.
Yep, exactly.
So I do like that side of it. That probably gives you a bit more room to play with the interior design too, which is what you like to do.
Yes, that's correct.
And it's definitely got an elevator. It's a 10-story building, so we're not concerned about the fourth floor. It looks good. I mean, the returns could be better, but we could try to, if I go back to the Excel, we could try to bring the price down a little bit, let's say 6.8.
I mean, typically, if we were to go chase this property, you would negotiate on my behalf, or how does that work?
Yep, that's what we would normally be doing, if possible. I mean, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
Possible, of course, yeah.
Depends on how stubborn the seller is and whether they got a lot of offers lined up, but we can definitely try. If we were to represent you in the purchase, we're looking at a worst case 18%. And then if we take the price down to 6.8 million, we're getting 5.1, which for 1993 Kawasaki Yokohama is not bad. It's not central Yokohama, so I would like to see slightly higher yield. But I mean, it's definitely doable, and it does have a lot of potential looking down the road, short-term rentals and so forth. So yeah, it's a nice one. I like that one. The ones that you've showed me so far, I actually like it the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a bit more sense, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. The other ones I shared with you in the second email, 7.44 minutes in Shibuya.
Just realized my camera was off. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. It was another building in the second email, the second link. But it looks like there's quite a few apartments. I think there's three apartments for sale in this same building. Which I don't know what that translates to. Is it an older buyer wanting to cash out now, or is it?
It's usually the case, yes. So it might be an older buyer, or the
The downside of that could be that something's happened with management or building fees or something, and then suddenly a few owners want to sell at the same time.
Yeah.
And but in most cases, yes, it's going to be a single buyer who's looking to offload a few of their properties. So if I put in the numbers in that one, let's have a look at this one. First of all, let me look at the location. So 1 minute walk. Tokaichiba, doko ka no, doko ka no, chotto matte. Okay, but that, let me share my maps with you as well. Give me a second.
Nihongo, jozu.
Where's Google Maps? There it is. This is really suburban though, isn't it? If you look at how long it takes anyone to get from here, let's look at all the popular places. So if we're looking at Yokohama Station, Okay, Yokohama Station, not too bad. If we're looking at Shibuya Station, 44 minutes. The only thing is we don't have the attractivity of being close to Haneda with this one.
Okay.
It's about an hour to Haneda. So this is really attractive for people who want to live close to Kawasaki or Yokohama. But compared to the other one, which was near Haneda, it doesn't give us that added value. So 40 minutes to Kawasaki, 45 minutes to Shibuya, 30 minutes to Yokohama Station. But if somebody wants to be close to Yokohama Station, they probably can find better places to rent. So let's look at the numbers for this one. Just give me a sec. So this one is, where's the price? $8,750. And we've got rental income of, no rental income. Okay. Why are they not telling us the rental income on this one? Am I missing it? Is it somewhere?
It just says gross yield 7.5.
It doesn't tell me anything, unfortunately.
Yeah.
5,850. Okay, let's put in the building fees. 5,850, 2,830.
So management fee, repairing fund. The repairing fund seems quite good. Rented daily service.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm thinking it might be possible that they've received notice from building management that the reserve fund fee going to go up soon.
Yeah.
Which might be why you're suddenly seeing three units being sold, either by the same owner or a few of them. And just looking at the size, so let's look at the size of this one. So that's a lot smaller than the previous one that we've just looked at. And in my opinion, it's more suburban, unless that person really wants to be closer to Yokohama Station. The location is not as attractive as the previous one we've just looked at.
Okay. The rent is probably, it's probably lower. Or they probably
Look, even if the rent is the same, we're down to 4% again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we can try to bring, let's bring this down to 17%. Even if we bring it down to 14%, you're not really improving the yield much. Rent could be higher, we don't know. But they're saying the gross rental is, gross rental is a really misleading calculation, but just going off, because the same website, going off what they say, 60,000. But I can't see how it would fetch more rent than the previous one if it's smaller and the location is more suburban.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what they're charging more for. Like, what are they thinking there that's worth paying more than that previous one, the 7.2?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm missing out on something location-wise. Did your friend who lives in Yokohama have any comments to mention about that particular location?
Actually, I didn't ask him about this one. But he did mention a couple of other locations to me that really got me interested. And they were in relation to obviously a quicker train line, sort of half an hour from Yokohama to Shibuya.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the area now, but it was one of the beside the one of the main lines begins with a T. Toki Chai, but oh, no, I can't remember.
Tokudai?
Tokudai maybe.
Okay. Well, if I look at, I'm just looking at the previous one again. Let me grab that address again. Maybe because this is Yokohama and that one is officially Kawasaki, maybe that's why they think the price should be higher and maybe rental prices are higher. I'm not sure. But if I bring up, let's just bring up both of those maps next to each other.
Check mine as well.
Wake up, Jeff. Oh, there we go. So, new share. What's the other show I want to give you?
I guess anywhere on the other side of the Tama River in that sort of Mizunokuchi sort of area.
I'm maybe it's just me, but I much more like the location.
I do. I like that one.
That one just looks really suburban to me. I could be really wrong about something because I'm not a Yokohama resident and I could ask some agents and people that live there, but the first location looks better to me. So unless I'm missing out on something, I think the price is probably the price and definitely the price to value ratio is a lot better on the first one.
Yeah.
But again, that will take more digging into. I can't really say. Maybe the price is lower on the first one because the first one's got some problem with the billing management. I don't know. That's where the due diligence that we need to do pre-purchase comes in. Those two are probably comparable, but personally, I like the first one better.
And it is like it does have that walking distance to the sort of bay area.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the third one that you forwarded now, the third link on that same email.
Yes.
So that's a really nice building. Let me check out the location. Okay, so the building is nice. The location is quite suburban again. Distance to Yokohama Station. Oh, no, sorry, what have I done? Go back. I want directions to Yokohama Station from here. So this one, yeah, similar distance to Yokohama Station. And if we're looking at Shibuya, I'm guessing they'll have to pass through Yokohama Station anyway, so that doesn't change much. Yeah, same, 40, 45 minutes. Oh, no, they don't have to go to Yokohama Station. They can actually break a left kind of thing. Okay, so I mean, similar distance. I like the looks of the building. The building looks very nice.
Yeah. It is quite attractive, actually.
Yeah, and let me just...
But this is the same. It looks the same as the previous one because the layout plan is the exact same sketch.
It is.
Looks a lot cleaner on this one.
I don't know. You need to ask. It's a different address, though. Definitely a different address.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Same architect.
Yeah, I think they might have just used the same floor plan by mistake.
Okay.
It's not the same. Are you talking about the logo on the right?
What
do you mean the same architect?
Yeah, actually, I think maybe you're right. Maybe they just use the same floor plan.
Yeah.
The only thing that's similar is the curves on the balconies.
Yeah. I know. Let's put the floor plan aside for a moment. This is also 1993, so I'm assuming the toilet and the bath would be separate in both of them. I'm not sure why. I don't know. We'll need to look into it. So numbers-wise, this is 8 million. Rent price, not specified again. So that makes it really difficult for me. 5850, 2830. So, oh no, the prices are the same again. That's something's a bit off there, man, because the building fees are exactly the same.
Maybe they've messed up the listing or something.
Yeah, I think some copy paste issues there.
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know. We just don't know much about this one. If the building exterior is anything to go by, it's a gorgeous building, but that doesn't look like 1993 to me. Maybe they're showing you a picture of some shopping center next to the building or something.
All right, yeah, that actually.
I'm not sure what that is. I have no idea. This one's a bit of a mystery, this listing.
I guess one of the other questions I had for this meeting was,
yep,
when we go ahead and purchase a property, I read somewhere recently that, and it makes sense to me, but I didn't think of it at the time, but I have to view the apartment before I actually make the purchase.
If you buy vacant, you can do that. But if you're buying a tenanted property, you're not allowed to enter. There's no inspections while a tenant is residing in the property.
Oh, okay. So there's no need for me to be in Japan then?
There's no need for you to be in Japan anyway, because if you go through us, we can represent you. And if you really want to, we can definitely take a trip to the property. We're not going to charge you any extra for that, just for transportation and accommodation fees.
Yeah.
And we travel coach, so that's not going to break the bank, but we can't enter tenanted properties. That's the only thing. So unless you're buying into vacant, which means that you're buying straight into expenses, not into income. If you're buying vacant, we can go there. We can even ask the agent in some cases. Once we've submitted an offer, the agent will be willing to go out of the way and go take pictures for us. If for any reason you want to just have the peace of mind that we had a look at everything that needs to be looked at, then we can go in person and do the pictures or a walkthrough video or whatever you want ourselves. But otherwise, there's no need for you to be here physically now.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That was something else that worried me just during COVID. Obviously, you know, there's no traveling at the moment. So yeah. I had hoped to take in the 100 meter sprint for the Olympics, but I don't think that's going to happen now. No. I'd love to go. I'd love to, you know, if I can come up with a good enough excuse to give, the local politicians here for reason for me to leave the country. Because that's what it comes down to. You're not allowed to leave, basically. So that's the rules.
Vast majority of our clients buy without actually visiting in person, unless they're buying a holiday home. If they're buying a holiday home, they'll either definitely pay us to go and inspect it in person, or they might come here when borders are open and look at them themselves. But the investment properties, I mean, our customers sometimes come to meet us before or after the purchase, or after the purchase, they might come and take a walk around the neighborhood and look at the building. But otherwise, they don't really come here in person. They look at Excel sheets, and we try to give them the best due diligence that we can based on the tenancy information, the building information, reserve fund, and of course, the area. And they buy based on that in most cases. But we're always happy to take people around. I haven't done this for over a year, but we're always happy to.
Yeah. One of the other questions I had for you was, I seen a post on your Instagram of another property in Fukuoka that was advertised. I think it was a 7.2% yield, gross yield, maybe. And you had commented that it was actually a really good deal. For me, I guess in my mind, as a backup plan, if I do purchase something, I'm always thinking, well, look, if things go the way we don't plan for, I could always live in this place for 6 months, you know. And that's the type of my rationale when it comes to bad investments, especially with property. Can I see myself living there for a short amount of time?
Yep.
I guess
was that a property? I'm just trying to find it now. Was that a property that you would actually want to live in, though? Because the 7.2% properties are usually not places that I'd be comfortable living in myself.
I guess not, but it's always a worst case scenario type of situation. So this one that you posted, it's a family size property. Sorry, it was in Kobe, sorry.
In Kobe, okay.
Yeah, 6.1 net pre-tax annual yield.
I'm seeing that one. Yep.
I mean, for you, Ziv, if you're looking at this property,
yep.
It's obviously, I mean, what are the, okay, pre-net tax 6.1. So what would the yield be on that one, say, for example, after?
What I've written down and what we put down on our social media or on our website is always the real yield as we calculate it, same based on that Excel sheet. So let me open that particular property up for you. Give me a second. When was this published? This was April. So that'll be just now.
Is this more of a Danchi style?
Yeah, just give me a second. Are you seeing my screen now, the new Excel?
Not yet.
So I think Zoom has only shared a particular file. Just give me a sec. Share. There we go. How about now? John?
Yeah, it's
you're seeing it now?
Starting to pop up.
Okay. Yeah,
I can see it now.
Yep. So this is actually looks like even better yield than I put. Is that the one? The meter.
Yeah, that's the one.
The square meters look off though. Just give me a sec.
63.18. You've got 63.15. Yeah, it's the same one, I think.
Wait, let me try to quickly. No, that's not the one either. Nagoya. Maybe it is that one. Hang on. Let's open the link and see if that looks like the same picture. No, that's not the one. Just bear with me. Let me look at the other Kobe property I had there. Maybe this one. No, I think that might be... The price doesn't look right too. That might be from a previous month. Hang on a tick. 63.18. No, the price is wrong on this one too. That one, the one that I'm looking at is 5.7. This is close to 105 US, so it's not that one. Let me just check in the March file. These are all Fukuoka. Have I got Kobe in there somewhere?
Do you actually ever come across properties with yields over 9% after, you know, post everything's been paid, you know, net?
We do occasionally, but those are either in far more suburban areas, so like Kumamoto City, Sapporo, for example. Sapporo is not suburban, but it's one of the lower price cities of the big cities in Japan.
Yeah.
But we would... there would normally be a reason for that. So it would either be a current tenant that's paying a lot more than the average rent, or it could be something that's, again, coming close to that age where it becomes a bit riskier. Okay, so are you seeing my screen now? I just shared another one.
Yep.
Yep. So this is the one that you were looking at.
Okay.
And this is, let me just check that we've got the prices right. So this has got 18%. I would probably assume even closer to 17% on this one, because the price is over 10 million. So yeah, 6.1, 6.2. What I liked about this one is just the family size, the fact that it was a family size property. I don't have a link for this one here, which means that we've probably received it directly from a realtor via PDF before they actually put it out on the multi-listing website. So we'll have to check whether it's still available or not. We can't actually see a link online for that one.
Okay.
But looking at the photos, where are the photos? So that's 3WP002. I'll bring up the rest of the photos that we've got for it. Oh, no, we don't. We only have the floor plan. I'll bring up the floor plan for you to see. Give me a sec. And let me share this. So that's the floor plan.
Oh, it is quite big.
Yes, so it's a lot bigger than what we normally see. It's a family-sized property, which I like because family tenants tend to stay a lot longer and take better care of properties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got an open-plan kitchen into a living dining area. It's got a tatami mat bedroom, plus another two rooms and a couple of balconies. Like there's a big one to the west, southwest. So not ideal for the sunlight, but still two balconies is great. And this is actually not a balcony. This is probably a laundry hanging area. It's sort of hanging down over the side of the building. But it functions as a balcony. You can't stand on it, but you can look out. It's like a big window with a space to hang clothes from to dry.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what I like most about it is the size of the place, the year build, and it's, where's it location wise? Let's have a look at the map for a sec. So if we look at the map, it's suburban, but not crazy suburban. Like if I scroll down, I can see quite a few, like Bukov, for example. They don't build Bukov shops in area where there's nobody coming to them. Like it's not going to be super suburban.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Quite a few schools and kindergartens around there. I see a park nearby. I'm not seeing any hospitals, another school. So I don't know Kobe. Oh, there is a hospital not too far off. I don't know Kobe all that well. We'll have to ask some agents or people who are actually living there. But generally speaking, it's a very good city to be investing in. And that area does look like comfortable suburban to me. It's not super central, but it's comfortable suburban. Mm-hmm. So to see 6.1... or 6.2 in Kobe for a family-sized unit built 1994, it would have to be a really bad area to convince me not to go for it. And Kobe doesn't have any of the, the neighborhoods that are really classified as bad. So, I do like that one.
Still, Kobe is still quite popular with foreigners.
Yes, it is quite popular with foreigners. It's one of Japan's biggest port towns, but it's also a very mixed industry. So it's not definitely not just blue collar. What's that?
There's a lot of it's very multicultural.
Yes, it's one of the international holiday destinations. So it's definitely not. It's definitely not a bad place to live, and it's one of Japan's more popular cities. Kind of like Fukuoka, everyone that I speak to who lives in Kobe is like swears by the city. So I'm quite comfortable with most of the neighborhoods around there. And the property profile is pretty good. So at this yield level, I would definitely go for that one over any of the ones that we've seen today, except maybe that Kawasaki Haneda one. That was pretty attractive to me too, but the yield was a lot lower. And it wasn't a family sized property. It was maybe a couple sized property, but definitely not family sized. And 63, you're going to get mom, dad, grandma, and the kid living in there in Japan. So,
that's yeah, 63 here in Sydney, so it's obviously it's totally different. Yeah, I know.
But yeah, we've got a friend. It was getting small for us, but we also, you know, half of our work we do from home. But we were sharing an apartment, sharing a building with a, now they're good friends. But the person living in front of us had the exact same apartment layout to ours, which is again close, I think 60 or 65 square, and they're living there with two cats and a teenage son, which for me is like wow. But yeah. People do that here on a regular basis. So,
yeah, God, it's like Ireland in the 60s.
Yeah. 60s. Yeah, I personally do like this one. And 1994, right? Like when we usually see these family units, they're usually late 80s at the best.
Yeah.
So 1994 for a family-sized unit is rare and very good.
Okay.
I mean, the ones with good yield, you can always find one that's, you know, generating 3%, but we do usually don't look into those.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It is quite small. And it was interesting that, you know, I like the way your spreadsheet had the breakdown and you know, return of investment over the years. And, you know, the more I look at it, I've just been so used to the Australian property market. You know, 20 years for return on the investment is obviously a long time, but at the same time, it's really a long sort of strategy.
Well, hopefully they grow in Australia too. Here, that's very far from being a given. So,
yeah.
So we do want to see higher. We do want to see higher cash flow for sure.
Yeah. No. Definitely. You know, those yields can justify it. Yeah. And I think the location is right. I think, you know, I think that they're very good to invest in.
Yeah. Question is whether it's still available. I'll have to contact the realtor for that.
Yeah, no problem. I think that was everything.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your time and all your efforts so far. I know you've been you know, entertaining me up until now with everything, and thanks so much for your patience. And,
well, today we're entertaining our YouTube channel listeners and podcast listeners, so you've returned the favor.
Yeah, now look, yeah, I can't wait to go back over this and have another good look at the analytics. And actually, over the last week, 2 weeks, I have been sort of looking a bit deeper into it, and yeah, I'd be interested to also see other apartments that you're recommending as well. Although that one we just looked at was very, very interesting. So,
yep. All right. Well, do your homework. Again, feel free to feed any of those numbers into the Excel sheets. And if you want me to give you feedback on any of them, just send them my way and I'll let you know what I think.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Awesome. Good speaking with you, Don. Thanks so much. Arigato gozaimashita.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so that was a long one. Hopefully they're well worth your time, as it does show you what we look at when we analyze these potential property deals on a daily basis here at NTI. So as you could probably tell from the conversation, these wouldn't necessarily be the properties that we would recommend to most of our clients, except in one or two cases. But John specifically wanted to review and analyze these particular properties that he found on his own while searching online. And the other takeaway here, of course, is that browsing the limited English resources available online isn't always the best course of action to take. So you're probably going to be a lot better off if you can work directly with Japanese property websites, either on your own with translation software handy or via someone like us as your proxy. You'll get far better exposure to what the market has to offer on the native platforms, not to mention clearer and more accurate information. Although in many cases, even the Japanese websites won't have all of the information available in all listings. And even when they do, there's really no substitute to professional experience, representation, and advice, which is what we're all about here at NTI. So don't be shy. If you'd like us to go through a similar exercise with you, we don't charge for our time. First couple of hours of consultation or research are always free. And as you could see, if you agree to be on the podcast or the YouTube channel, we'll be even more accommodating with our time. So drop us a line in the comment section or wherever you might have found this episode, or directly via email on info@nippontradings.com. That's info@nippontradings.com. And let's talk shop. Oh, and also do feel free to hit me up if you'd like a copy of these deal analysis spreadsheets that we've been reviewing together with John. More than happy to share those with you as well. And if you're thinking about setting up or tweaking your online presence, either here in Japan or overseas, quick reminder that one of our other sponsors is Humble Bunny, the best bilingual English and Japanese web design and e-commerce implementer here in Japan. So if you've got a business, big or small, or are working for a business that needs a better online presence, hit them up on inquisitive@humblebunny.com. Ask to speak with Nate, tell him you heard about the company here on the podcast, and they'll sort you right out at very reasonable prices. And if you got any other kind of Japan-related business or product or project that you'd like to advertise here on the podcast and reach tens of thousands, hopefully soon to be hundreds of thousands, English speakers who are either in Japan, regular visitors to Japan, or just interested in Japan in any way, shape, or form, reach out to us and ask about our sponsorship programs. We're mostly full for the next few months, but we could potentially have some available spots for you to advertise on from the third quarter of this year or so. So just let us know and we'll give you an estimate and a timeline for advertising on the podcast. It is a lot cheaper than you might think. So that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Hope to have you with us again next time. And as always, we would really appreciate it if you could share this episode and the podcast with your own networks or leave us a rating, review on the iTunes store. Let us and the world know what you thought about it. Have a great day or night ahead. And until next time, よろしく.